listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Baucom, and you are on the Save the Marriage podcast. This podcast is designed to help you save your marriage no matter where it is, and the process of saving your marriage is based on my Save the Marriage system. That system has been used for about 20 years now for people around the world, and I've been refining it over those 20 years to help people to save their relationship even if they're the only one who want to. Now, I don't do this by myself. I have a team behind me of coaches and other staff that help us make sure that we are delivering the best services to you and giving you the best foot forward in how to save your relationship. And one of those pieces is a group of people I treasure in my whole program, and those are my coaches. These are coaches who have worked with people around the world and worked with people long before I ever found them. I've only located the best coaches and trained them in my methodology to add to their system. I've been introducing you over the last few weeks to those coaches, and today I continue that with a conversation with Laurie Johnson. Laurie is a coach that came to coaching because of a storm, not an emotional storm, not a crisis of a storm, but a true storm, Hurricane Katrina. She'll tell us that story and give you some great advice that every relationship should know about, every person in a relationship should know about. So let's go now and listen as I interview Laurie Johnson. Laurie, thank you so much for being here. I'm really excited to have a chat with you and get a chance both for me to hear a little bit more about your story and also for our listeners. And I'm always interested in how people kind of get into coaching, because it's kind of the how did you get here, what created that helps us understand why you do what you do. So could you talk a little bit, Laurie, about how you got into coaching and how you got to where you are now?
Sure. So I came to coaching because of a hurricane that destroyed my home, the inside of my home. And once we rebuilt, I was feeling a real lack of passion and enthusiasm for things that I had done at work and at home, and just felt sort of drained and out of energy. And I found a recorded talk by a coach in my library, listened to it, thought, oh, I think I might need a coach. So I hired one. And then after hiring a coach, I recognized that I might want to do that as well. And it was pretty congruent with some of the work that I had done. And so I thought, okay, here we go. Let's do this training that she went through as well. And that was sort of the beginning of an eye-opening experience for me, that coaching as a profession was much more about personal development than I realized. And so that part really has, all of this has changed my life, but that part really helped me to understand that I had to change my life in order to help to coach other people in order to make changes in their lives as well.
So for a lot of people, it is some big event, and the big event for you was the hurricane, and it was Katrina, right?
It was Katrina, yeah.
So a pretty big one, and a lot of people were devastated. Some people struggled to come out of that, but for you, that was a pivot point in what's this life about? Is that right?
Yeah, it really kind of helped me to recognize that I wanted to live a life that was more mindful of what my experiences were and what stuff I accumulated and what I needed to let go of. And because I recognized then that when you drill it all down and you're left with this space in your home and your community and your work environment that looks like you've been through a war zone and everything is just sort of eliminated for a moment, then we're able to really kind of think a little differently about what we want to put back in. And yeah. So that was why it was sort of intentional for me to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a traumatic event that pivots you basically to a deeper place for you of work, of what's this all about? How do I hold on and let go at the same time, and how you step forward to that? What I've also discovered, though, is that most coaches uncover their coaching. It's not like they start from scratch. So my guess is there are some roots that stretch back even before that hurricane. Are there some other pieces of life that you see that led you towards coaching along the way?
Absolutely. Absolutely, you're right. So I had done my original bachelor's degree was in psychology, and I had done human service work for at that time, I guess it was over 10 years, maybe even longer. I had worked with children who were traumatized by abuse or neglect. I had worked with parents of children who were traumatized by abuse and neglect. I worked with parents who were divorcing and needed to create a co-parenting plan. And so I had been doing a lot of work with people that didn't know how to move forward. And I had been moving them forward just in a different way. Mm-hmm. So when a lot of people think when they come to coaching, oh, I feel like I've been doing this all my life. I didn't feel like I had been coaching all my life because I'd had this coaching conversation that was masterful. But I did feel like I was trying to help people move forward out of some sort of a difficult event for a large period of my career. And so the thought that I could marry that with a skill set and some structure and a way of moving people forward who really were not necessarily traumatized would be a great thing for me to do. And that's why it appealed to me to become a coach so much.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true for you too, but my background training as a therapist, I recognized after reading someone coaching that I was kind of hedging already towards the coaching approach, even in my therapy, and was using that much more as a background just because that was my natural place of being. And it sounds like that similar for you, that there was already the remnants in there. You were already doing the helping profession, just not under the auspices of the coaching world.
Yes. And I think it was important to me to get the training that I needed to be able to do it well and to do it effectively and within the parameters that that are really healthy coaching agreements and healthy coaching structures, because otherwise then, you know, you're not doing your best and then the client isn't moving forward in their best way as well.
Which raises the question of what you see as the role of a coach, because I think sometimes people really struggle with understanding what coaches do as opposed to other professions, like what would be different from coaching versus being a social services person or a therapist or a consultant. So what is it that you see your role as a coach?
I think the biggest eye-opening experience for me and for my clients is to be able to listen under the surface of what's being said and to help them look at something in a new way, rather than going back over the same kinds of issues over and over again, but really in the moment, what's being said, what am I hearing, and then being able to reflect that back or to remember it to the next session. Mm-hmm. so that there's an accountability there to what's really true. It's helping people to connect. You know, we talk about the mind, body, spirit connection a lot, and a lot of people think that's just so woohoo. But for me, it's really connecting our brains with our hearts and our guts. And those three things operate very differently. And when they operate well together, we're generally pretty happy with what's happening. But when we feel something in our gut, our mind will either try to convince us to do it, or it will try to convince us not to do it sometimes if we're not aligned in that way. And then our heart feels that compassionate place, that non-thinking, non-intuitive place, it just feels. And so when you can help a client connect that those three things really authentically for them, and help them make a decision about how to move forward, keeping those three things kind of connected, I think that that's when I feel like they're successful. Not going backwards, not staying stuck in what might happen and the fear, which is where sometimes the gut gets in the way, right? I'm afraid this is going to happen, so I can't, you know. And so really just helping them integrate those three systems in my mind that's how I know I'm doing well. So in order to do that well, I have to make sure I'm always doing that for myself too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because I'm thinking back on your own story, and you talked about the Katrina experience, and Katrina is kind of that moment, that sticking point, and you have options there. You could have spent the rest of your time kind of looking back and thinking about what you lost, thinking about the hurt of that, you know, the fears of that, and you can also process that by looking at what are the possibilities, what's the potential that's there, and how do you move your alignment towards moving forward rather than kind of reprocessing that same story. So as you talk about your role as a coach, I recognize that's a piece that you found in your own process.
Yeah. And what I discovered is, and I tell clients who come to me through in trauma and crisis and relationship crisis through this program, I tell clients a lot sometimes about this story that there was an event that was really a perfect storm. This could have been a much weaker storm. It could have been a more powerful storm. It could have hit a different way. It could have, there's a lot of variables, but all of those variables came together, unfortunately, in that moment where it couldn't have happened any differently if we had, you know, nothing that we could do could have changed it. Mm-hmm. And if you observe it from that higher level of looking, that's not a good way of putting that, but if you're able to look at it from a big picture space, then you're able to see that there are things that were beyond your control and there are things that you could do differently. And so the same, I think, is true with clients. If you can look at a difficult situation from a higher level of watching everything that led up, everything that happened, everything that converged in that moment, all of your life experiences, the sum total of all of the memories and the things that you've done and felt good about doing and not felt so good about doing, if you can really kind of have that big picture moment and say, okay, this was a perfect storm. It's happened. I'm aware of it. I know what it is. And now what am I going to do about it? What's the next step?
Yeah, one of my mentors, Thomas Leonard, always talked about the present perfect, and he wasn't talking about it in terms of English class. But you know, where you are exactly right now is an exact representation of everything that's happened to you and everything you've done in your past that arrived you at this place. So your perfect storm, you know, the present perfect. This is where you are. Now, how do you shift around and how do you find your alignment with some other places you might want to go? Does that make sense?
That is exactly what it is. Yeah. And that was Katrina was a present perfect, a huge present perfect mm-hmm. moment for yeah. me. But I feel like we need to live that way sort of every day. My son, we were on a trip last week or week before for a volunteer event. And he turned to me and said, "Do you ever feel like this time to be alive is the best time to be alive, even if it has, you know, it's fraught with challenges and difficulties and, you know, people are feeling this way or that way. But every day that we move sort of forward into the next day, we understand that we have the opportunity to be mindful about that the present is perfect and that we have all of these things that we've carried with us. And the good news is the things we've carried with us are those things that will help us in the future if we let them, if we're aware of them, and if we use them.
Yeah, it's interesting. Your son pointed out the fact that every moment is the best moment if you live in that perspective.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Right. So what do you think is your, as you think back, I mean, you're working with a lot of different client types, but what is your favorite moment? What's your favorite part of being a coach?
I think there's two moments, but maybe my favorite moment is when someone comes to me and they're able to really identify what it is that they want. Because I think a lot of times when people make decisions to hire a coach or hire a therapist or even have a conversation with a friend, we're focused more, I think we automatically sort of go on this autopilot to, well, what I don't want is this. When I have clients who can, and they really do typically hire a coach because there are things that they don't want mm-hmm. to have happen again or things that aren't going well, right? But if they are really hyper sensitive to what they do want, or even slightly in the space of looking toward the future, I think that they're much more able to articulate a great starting point for us. We can't always obviously get in one session. We certainly can't usually get to the big picture want, but we can begin to break that apart then and really look at in this moment that we have together, what would be the best way to spend our time? What would be the most beneficial to you in moving forward? And sometimes it takes a little while for people to be able to articulate what they want rather than what they don't want. It's always easy for us to think about what we don't prefer. My friend who's very intuitive and is a psychic actually always says, when people say, "I hate that, I hate that," she always says, "Oh, maybe replace that word with, I don't prefer that," or that mm-hmm. phrase, "I don't prefer that." So I think we do often understand what we don't want, but the clients who begin with me at the space of what they do want begin in possibility. And I think if we begin in possibility, we're much more likely to be able to connect pretty quickly to that connection between our head and our heart and our gut.
I don't know if you've had that, I'm sure you've had the experience, because I often hear people say, you know, I don't want, I don't want, I don't want. And my question is, what do you want? And they often say, I have no idea. You know, they've formulated what they want to avoid, which is to me kind of like in the old driving lesson, you know, don't be thinking about where you don't want to go, because that's exactly where you kind of move towards. And the second piece that resonated there was you talked about your friend's comment about hate. You know, hate mm-hmm. is such a strong attachment.
It is. And it's very, there's a very, I remember hearing as a child, there's a very thin line between love and hate. And there is, it's a very intense emotion. And so mm-hmm. that's why it feels very similar sometimes. But yes, when we spend our time and our energy and our focus and our words and our thoughts all on something that intense, whether it's hate or whether it's something we don't want, we are likely to find, our brains will look for ways in which we're finding that, right? Our brains are fascinating things. And so I tell people this all the time, if your story is that my marriage is failing, then you will look for ways to make that story true. And so part of what I do a lot of times with clients is to really help them look at what their personal story is. And then if their spouse's story is also that this marriage is failing, or I'm not in love with you. I love you, but I'm not in love with you. I hear that response a lot. If that's the story, our brains will search for ways to help us understand that. Yep, you're on the right track. That's your story. The story's true. You got it. See, this is why it's true. And that's where we have to get that connection to the other parts of our authentic selves that help us rewrite and rewire that story.
We end up recreating those pieces that we try to avoid of the story.
Exactly. Yeah. We will look to create what we think is true about ourselves. Absolutely.
And then spend a lot of energy validating it.
and looking for other people to validate it too.
Yeah. Okay. So that's great pieces of, I mean, that's the piece. It sounds like you're intrigued by how all those pieces fall together and attracted to helping people untangle that as they're moving forward.
Yes, absolutely. That's the fun part for sure. Maybe not for them always, but it's fun for me.
It's a painful part, but I think in the end, the satisfying part for the client. Speaking of which, what is your, if you're thinking of your ideal client, what would you say is your ideal client?
My ideal client is somebody who knows exactly how they think coaching will benefit them. Now, it's not always easy for people who've never been coached or never considered hiring a coach, but I really like it when people send me an email or call me and they say, so here's really what I want. I want to be able to X. And sometimes it's create a plan. Sometimes it's, you know, to get an understanding. Sometimes it's to rewrite the story, reconnect in a deeper way. They understand exactly what's gone wrong, and they understand what they need to be able to move toward, I guess, what we would describe as the opposite of wrong, which would be right, right action, right communication, as you call it. And I think I use those words all the time because right action is so important. So I think that when clients come to me with a clear understanding of what they want to do, even if they have no intention of hiring me as a coach to go forward, I want them to get the best value out of our time together that first time. And so for them to know exactly how they want to spend their time helps me to understand exactly how to structure that time that we have together.
And part of that sometimes is working with them to clarify that, to get to the place where they can see how they want to spend the time. And it sounds like for you, it's that click in when they really get how they want to do that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So you spend lots of time coaching. What are some pieces that you see as maybe wisdom pieces that you think every couple or every person who's in a relationship ought to know, needs to know?
That feeling doesn't equate to a good marriage always, because we don't always feel it. I mean, as much as I love the person that I have spent my life with, or a good part of my life with, I understand that I'm not every day feeling that overwhelming sense of love and connection, and I can't wait for you to come home, and I can't wait for us to do this or do that. Sometimes we just don't feel it. And when people say those words, I love you, but I'm not in love with you, marriage is very often a decision. It's a decision to commit to each other. It's a decision to stay committed. It's a decision to do whatever you need to do to make that better than it you know, maybe is in the moment. And so I think for me, when I think about, when I look at my kids, when I look at my parents, when I look at my relationship, it's not ever thinking about giving up, but you will think about sometimes that things are difficult. But if you have that moment where you think, oh my gosh, this is just not going well, or I'm really unhappy. We're all going to think at times that we're really unhappy, right? Just stuff happens, life happens, disconnect happens. But just that commitment, that decision to make it stick and to stick with it until it feels that way again is really something that I think people don't always recognize. And if they were able to just stay the course and wait for the feelings to come back, generally, you know, I think that those things do happen if we follow a series of things. And you have the best system. I mean, really, people tell me this all the time when I'm coaching them, you know, this system saved my marriage. It really saved my marriage. And I think I know, because it's brilliant. I mean, it's really very no nonsense, very connected ways of taking right action and reconnecting with people. But I think if people would just understand that every day isn't going to be that feeling of I feel it, I love that person, I can't wait to go home, it's just impossible to maintain that standard.
Yeah. I appreciate that so much. The idea that is a feeling versus decision. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, we humans believe that what we feel right now must be true, must be acted upon, rather than thinking back and saying, how do I decide? And I love your comment there that it's a daily decision. You know, staying married is an ongoing process, an ongoing decision-making process. And so assessing a marriage by feelings being there or not being there tends to be a place, you know, you talked about the story that people begin to reinforce their story. And that's where they begin to then try to prove to themselves that there must be something wrong here if they're not feeling it right now. And your point is that there are some ways through that, that there are some better ways of moving through that.
Absolutely.
Other pieces of advice you'd give to people in a relationship?
I think connecting with your inner authentic self frequently, and I guess it doesn't matter how often, but really for me, I try to assess fairly often whether I'm feeling connected to my partner. And if I'm not feeling connected, then what are things that I can do to reconnect? Because I do know from a relationship that didn't end up sustaining as I thought it would, that if we don't continue to reconnect, if we lose that connection, that really is critical. And we can lose it a little bit in the difficulties of life, caregiving for aging parents, or, you know, having new children. I mean, it does happen naturally in some life events, right? But if we assess, are we disconnected? Are we connected? What are ways that we can reconnect? What's going on that's keeping me from connecting? And how can I eliminate some of that so that I can spend that quality time or spend that? And it doesn't have to be a major thing. It just has to be a way, it's a way of being with each other that shows that you are connected, rather than I'm in this room, you're in that room, I'm doing this, you're doing that. So I think just assessing that fairly often, because I do think that the people that I work with, and in my own personal experience in the past, I can recognize that when things went really, really wrong, it was a huge disconnection. And I hear it in people's stories. Well, we, you know, this is how we were being, and this is how we disconnected. And I see now that we were disconnected, and now I'm trying to reconnect it. So it's kind of like when you're training for half marathon, and I am doing that now. And I talked to some people who did that last year, not very well, and they say, well, I didn't train at all, and then all of a sudden I was running and I couldn't do it, and I'm miserable and I can't move, and it's been a week, and I think that's not how I want to be. So it's kind of like that. It's kind of like just maintaining that little bump in your connection all along the way, so that you don't find that at the end of the, you know, at the end of the year when you're supposed to do this half marathon, you can't do it. And yeah, the marriage is the same. Yeah.
When it matters, the connection's not there because you didn't put it in along the way.
Exactly. Yep.
You brought in two pieces, though. There's a connection with the spouse, and there's also a connection with your authentic self.
And so when you're not, I mean, and I have been a caregiver for my mom. You know, she had Alzheimer's. It's a very debilitating disease. It's very difficult on a caregiver. When you have small children, you're not disconnected to yourself at those times, because your energy is all focused on, you know, on someone else. And I think men, I've talked to men too, who are primary caregivers for their children or for their family members, or they're working or they're entrepreneurs. This is a common frame too, is, you know, when you have a something else that's really distracting and disconnecting you from who you really are, then you can't really connect with someone else. So it's very important, that personal development, that there is a we, and the we needs to be very, very strong, but both parts that make up the we have to really be working on their own stuff too. And sometimes when life events happen, we just kind of check out. We can't handle it. And there's nothing wrong with that. It is what it is. But we need to recognize it and say, gosh, I'm really checked out, and then do whatever we have to do to fill our own souls for the moment, to be able to really fill the soul of another person that we care about.
That strong we, that strong self, are really hand in hand.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, Laurie, just as we close this out, I mean, there are people, if you're listening to this conversation, you might have heard something Laurie said that, and you say, that fits me. That's where I need to be. That's where I need to do my work. And so Laurie is one of my coaches, so she's available to help you if that makes sense. If it makes sense, it's because this resonated with you. It's not just your head says it, but you, that whole alignment happens for you. And if that does happen, let me recommend that you contact Laurie and chat with her a little bit about what that might look like. So, Laurie, what is the best way of contacting you?
Email is the best way of contacting me, because I'm on the phone a lot during the day with clients, and so that makes it difficult for me. So, Laurie, Laurie, at SaveTheMarriage.com is the best way to reach out to me. So again, that's Laurie, the northern way of spelling Laurie, at SaveTheMarriage.com.
Laurie, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and for being a part of the team. You bring so much to my organization and to the other coaches. So thank you for being here today, and thank you for being a part of our process.
Oh, thanks. It's an honor for me to be a part of your team and to read your work and to be able to share your work with others. But it's also an honor for me to be able to coach people in the times that they need it the most.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.